Ladies and gentlemen, this is Killer Cross. Please do not notify the police. Your signal has been interrupted. You are now listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420. Tuck your chin, please, sir. Thank you.
Wow, what a fantastic gift.
I realize the title of your show, Rock and Wrestling Local 420. And I'm going to take that idea and go extreme.
Alrighty then, this is Bill Nershey of the String Cheese Incident coming to you from up in the Windy Mount. I'm here joining Cosmic Chris on the Rock and Wrestling Local 420.
This is the Big Ugly J.D. Bishop, and if you're not listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420, you must be stupid!
Hey dear radio buddies, it's me, Max Volume. You are listening to Rock and Wrestling and Local 420 with Cosmic Chris.
Hey, this is Chad of the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling Podcast. When you're done listening to my show, head on over and listen to the Rock and Wrestling Local 420, and I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Hey, folks, I got a name for you, one of the greatest podcasts in podcasts alive today. They don't call you a great podcast. They call you Rock and Wrestling in Local 420. Beat it if you can.
Well, hello, folks. It's been probably about 6 weeks. And like I said last time, I kind of wanted to come at you right now with a bunch of interviews and stuff like that. Because it just gets monotonous. Unless you have a really huge audience, it's hard to just, when you're still dealing with a normal life and having a job to pay for your kids and stuff like that, it's really hard to really come up with something off the cuff every single week. And I realize, well, you know, until I get a bigger audience, I'm just going to produce shows when I have guests. So I'm going to be bringing you another guest, just like I talked to you last time. And it will be a Josh Miller from River's Edge, from Teen Witch, as well as the Wonder Years. You know, it was such an awesome interview. I really enjoyed it. Didn't really go as long as my other ones. Went a little about a half an hour, which is, you know, good enough for me, because I got a half an hour, you know, almost 40 minutes just talking to a guy that I've just respected my whole life since I was 10 years old, you know? So, you know, with that said, and I got some other interviews coming up, I will be doing some more interviews with a couple local DJs from KOZZ here. One being the Sax Man, who handles the weather and stuff like that. And one will be an old friend of mine, Steve Funk, who has been with KOZZ for years. He used to manage, when I was with Cosmic Freeway as the road manager, he used to be their basically their agent and their manager. And I would, you know, would go on the road with him. And I'm going to be doing an interview with him. So we can talk about a lot of cool stuff. So yeah, I'm just going to be every few weeks or so. I mean, if I get enough interviews, I'll come back to doing it every week. I just want to have something fresh to talk about. So, you know, like I was saying about the audience, it's not like I have like a small audience. I have fans, and that's why I like doing this, because I do have a few thousand of you that, you know, small but tried and true, and it's really nice to have that. You know, but if you're not somebody that's, you know, a million subscribers a week, you know, everyone has it. Like Eddie Trunk says, everyone has a podcast now. So you really have to, you know, do something in order for you to really keep it if you don't have a quarter million followers. So one thing I like doing is I like interviewing people, and I've looked at what I can do the best out of what I do. And like I said, you know, when you work a job and you don't have, you know, I'm not making money at this. I have other friends that make money at this. But I'm basically doing it because I love doing this. So, you know, I mean, I just basically realized, you know what? And plus, like I've told you in the last few episodes, I've had a lot of bullshit happen in the last 6 months that, you know, I don't even want to get into because I've gotten into it in previous episodes. So you pretty much know what's going on, you know. I had my friend die on Halloween. I've had my aunt die 2 weeks after that. Then I had another acquaintance die. And I just found out a couple weeks ago that my friend that died on Halloween, her ex-husband, Scott, who's a friend, I was a friend of both her ex-husband and her current husband, both for 25 to 30 years. You know what I mean? So, like, I love both of them. And Scott had died, too, 5 weeks after Brenda. And he died on, ironically, December 8th, the same day that Dimebag Darrell and John Lennon got murdered. And I didn't find out this until a couple weeks ago when I went to his service. And so, yeah, I've just had a lot of shit happen to me, you know. And like I said, since I don't have a million subscribers, it's hard to do because I'm not, like I said, making money at it. So I just figured, well, why not do this after I got 3, 4, 5 interviews in the can again? And that's how I actually started this. Like, I didn't do any episodes until I had like 10 episodes recorded when I first started this about four and a half years ago now. And I'm up to, you know, this is episode 199. I'm like really surprised. Now, if I had been at it consistently, I'd be up at least to 240 episodes probably, you know, because like I said, if I should have been at 200 last September, you know what I mean? So, but because I've been going through stuff, I've been inconsistent, so I apologize. But with that said, last time I came to you was a little bit before Christmas. In fact, the week before Christmas. Now, I'm not going to go word for word, line for line, down live wire and blabbermouth like I normally do because I read the headlines. I've got about 4 or 5 things I want to just talk about, and mostly all music related. I'm going to have a wrestling segment like normal, but I'm going to do that after we hear the interview. And but man, first off, on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2021, we lost Betty White. I could not believe, I mean, right 3 weeks before her fucking 100th birthday. And you can look at it like, you know, she got robbed over the last couple of weeks between, you know, we all wanted her to be the female George Burns. But at the, you know, who's to say that she was just like fine with that day. And you know what? After 2 years of this bullshit, I'm fucking 100 years old, basically. Only a couple of weeks from being 100. So she did. She spent a century on this fucking earth, pretty much. You know, who? Whatever. I'm out. You know, it's all good. You know, you can look at it in a bunch of ways, but she will be sorely missed. I mean, everything she did, Hot in Cleveland, the Golden Girls, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, just so much. She was on Mama's Family, I think, a few episodes. Just, you know, married to Alan Ludden, you know, on every fucking game show in the 70s, from the 50s through the 80s, pretty much, even into the 90s. Hollywood Square, Super Password, fucking, like, the list is fucking endless, man. So yeah, she will be so missed, and there's been so much shit in the last month since she's died. It's insane. Another couple deaths that have really rocked my world. Let's see. Meatloaf was a big one. Meatloaf died, and I'm going to go into this a little later too, because there's all this bullshit about Meatloaf because I guess he wasn't vaxxed. And, you know, like I said, I'm triple vaxxed. You know, I believe in the vaccine, you know, but I still have my issues on what's going on right now. And some people may not agree with me. And what bothers me is people are making fun of Meatloaf because he probably wasn't vaxxed. The guy was 74 years old. The guy had a right to do whatever he wanted to do. And, you know, I'm just tired of seeing all these memes making fun of him when, dude, he lived an awesome fucking life, you know? My aunt wasn't vaxxed, but she was like, hey, get the shot before she made sure to make sure that we all got our shots. And, you know, and some people may not believe in the vaccine, and that's their right. And it's just getting so fucked up that people are still fighting about this shit. Enough people have gotten vaccinated. We need to move on from this. Okay, so not only that, let's see. Howard Hessman, Dr. Johnny Fever, fucking Mr. Moore, Charlie Moore from Head of the Class. I mean, he's, oh man, he was in Dr. Detroit, like so many cool shit. Oh, you know what? I loved him in, oh God, he was that NASA guy in Flight of the Navigator. So, you know, Howard Hessman is like another one that was really huge. He was 81. Couldn't believe it. 81 years old. I was like, holy shit. You know, that's just as old as Phil Lesh now. You know, I mean, he really was like a 60s hippie. You know, I just thought he was probably more like, you know, Bob Weir aged, 74 or something like that. But he was well into his 80s. I mean, not well, but 81, you know, and so that's, that's another one that really got to me. And there's a few ones that I'm probably going to forget. But one of the biggest right now, man, Johnny Z. And for those of you who don't know who Johnny Z is, Johnny Z is essentially the father of thrash music. Anthrax, Metallica, Riot, like all these fucking bands, dude. Testament, Overkill, these huge fucking bands, Bay Area, LA, and New York. Now, he was based out of New York and New Jersey and all that, but he brought Metallica from San Francisco to New York and slept on Anthrax's fucking floors and shit, and ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So this is a guy that without Johnny Z, we wouldn't have thrash music. We wouldn't have the heavy metal as most people think about it. This was a major, major guy. And he was a mentor to Eddie Trunk, you know, and just the two main people that you need to know if you're into thrash at all or heavy metal would be on the East Coast, Johnny Z and his wife, and who died last year, and Brian Slagle. Brian Slagle was the guy that put together the compilation albums that helped form Metallica. Those two guys are considered the fathers of thrash music. And Brian Slagle, thank God, is still here. But Johnny Z, he apparently was, I believe, 69, which is fairly young, I guess. But apparently he had compilations. Eddie Trunk said he didn't even know he was sick, but apparently he had lung cancer or something to that effect. I don't know if that's exactly what it was, so don't quote me. But, you know, yeah, and how I had heard is I had heard it on the Eddie Trunk show, and he said he had the app that allows you to do texts on the flight. You're not allowed to use your cell phone, but they have a free app that you can use so you can at least get texts. And so all of a sudden in the air, you know, 3 miles up in the air on his way to the West Coast, he's all sorry to hear about Johnny Z. And he texts back and he says, what the fuck are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh, Johnny Z passed away. And he found out in the air on the way here. And then the moment he landed, he had texted with Lars, with Scott Ian, with Charlie Benanti, like all the fucking people. And one of the, Ace, that's another one. Johnny Z and Eddie Trunk signed Ace Frehley a few years out of Kiss, you know, when he was kind of doing nothing like Ozzy was in the beginning when Sharon picked him up. he was just kind of a drug addict and drunk. He was not in KISS anymore. And Eddie Trunk signed that fucking guy, and Ace became a bigger... He's honestly, he's had the best solo career of any of the members of KISS. You know, so... You know, I've loved Ace Frehley for years. I grew up on Ace Frehley, and he's going to be coming here with Alice Cooper, so that's going to be pretty cool. But yeah, Johnny Z, man, that's one that is just really fucking, really fucking hardcore with me. And so yeah, there's a lot of things that I really want to talk about. One of the main things is, and now I'm going to get back into, you know, I've always said I'm tired of fucking talking shit about Trump. I'm tired of talking shit about Biden. Every time I say anything on my Facebook now, there's so much hate from the left side or the right side. It does not matter. The extremists is how I like to put it. There's nobody that's in the middle anymore. And it's so funny because... Now it's not even about Trump anymore. It's about fucking Neil Young and Joe Rogan. And, you know, I've always liked Neil Young. He's never been one of my favorite artists. It's not like Bob Dylan or, you know, or Dr. Hook or anything like that, you know, for me. But, you know, I always liked Crosby, Stills, and Nash better with Young than without him. And he basically, in my opinion, now I'm going to get into both sides of this, but I think he used bully tactics to attack Joe Rogan, and I love Joe Rogan. And so many people, because Neil Young is pulling his music off of Spotify, and now other acts are following suit, but they don't even realize because they see that Joe Rogan had these people on that they don't like and that they're spreading misinformation about the disease and about the, you know, that if you don't take Joe Rogan off Spotify, then you'll have to take me off Spotify. What's funny about that is he only owns half of his music. Half his music is also owned by this other company that, you know, is responsible for a lot of fucked up shit. And I'm not even going to get into it because I don't want to get busted for defamation. I just know by watching this other guy that he had a list of stuff. And I was just like, oh, wow. But that company is known for fucking shit up, not being a good company. And I at least researched that. So, you know, but he basically, you know, and in some ways he does have a right to make a stand with his, you know, that's fine and dandy. But when you use bully tactics, when you don't know the truth, just because you hear some right-wing people on the Joe Rogan podcast, Joe Rogan is pretty much a liberal guy with some conservative views. He likes to hunt and stuff like that. And he has people on his show all the time that are of different ideals. Dave Chappelle, like, you know, Bert Kreischer, fucking Bill Burr, like MMA people, people that are left, people that are right. And he gives a platform to speak whatever. It's just a conversation, kind of like how I do mine. I modeled my show after people like Eddie Trunk and Joe Rogan and stuff like that, who I respect. And, you know, sometimes I don't always agree with Joe Rogan, but to put him in this category of spreading disinformation, that in itself is a lie. So everything Neil Young is doing is built on a fucking lie, and it pisses me off. And you may not agree with me. You know, that's why I'm saying I'm not trying to get political, like about the whole Trump and about the whole Biden thing, because you alienate half your audience every time you do. But as a podcaster, I have to stand up for Joe Rogan because I listen to the guy all the time and I listen to podcasts of people that I don't necessarily agree with. And he always says, don't take my advice. I am not telling you to. He said he believes in vaccines. He just doesn't want to do one for him because he's the same way I am. Yes, I am triple vaxxed, but I also believe, like Dr. Oz says, this is a herd mentality. Everyone gets the same shot. I don't think that's really you know, the right thing. Now, that's my opinion. I don't think a 12-year-old child whose immune system necessarily gets the same dose as what I get, because I just don't think they need it. This, like, when they eradicated polio, it was a vaccine that pretty much wiped out polio. You never had to get it again. You got it when you were a fucking baby. And they don't even give it out anymore, I don't even think. I don't even think they do the polio. They might. But, you know, the measles, the mumps, they do all that. So your inoculations, and they give that to you as children. And you get boosters once in a while for certain ones. But for the most part, you know, it's when you're a little kid. That's when you get all your shots. That's what all these immunizations for schools are. And, you know, I don't get the flu shot, because I got sick more when I had the flu shot than when I didn't have the flu shot. The flu shot is only like 30% effective. This vaccine is like 95% effective, you know? And, you know, it never says we're going to, like, you know, this is, you know, gets rid of COVID, because people are still getting COVID. It's going to be around for a while. You know, and my opinion is, like I said, I do think this is a giant social experiment. They wanted to see how we would react. Now, you may not believe that. And if you don't, that's fine. And what I was saying on Facebook the other day with my friend was, you know, because we were kind of arguing over Facebook, and then he fucking went off on me. I said, dude, don't insult me, man, because I'm not insulting you just because you believe differently than me. Whatever happened to agree to disagree? You know, it's like, hey, you know, let's just get on. You believe that, I believe this. And until one of us is proven wrong, you know, it's like, and people can't get over themselves and just be friends and family again. And I want, and part of this is social media and the scare tactics of corporate media, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC. Yes, they are all biased. If you look at Fox News, it straight tells you it's just nothing but right-wing fucking Republican shit. Same thing with CNN. They're pretty much Democrat, blue, liberal, you know what I mean? And they're all like that now. They didn't used to be. 30 years ago, you could watch any of them, and they were pretty in the middle, which is what really a proper news show should be. They shouldn't be like I like Don Lemon, but having his opinion on what he thinks about Trump is just kind of like herd mentality, making people think you, what you want to think. And I'm so tired of this, and it's all a bunch of edited shit. Like I used to say about the whole QAnon thing with the YouTube channels, it's just a bunch of rhetoric and edited shit. And now there's this fucking video, because Joe Rogan's being attacked so much, where he, as a comedian, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, was using the N-word, and he was showing hypocrisy in stuff like that. And, you know, and he now has to defend himself and say, look, I'm not a racist. I was saying, you know, kind of like, you know, hey, how George Carlin would have used it back in the day. You know, they're only words. You can't be afraid of words that speak the truth. I'm not saying the N-word speaks truth. I'm just saying that, you know, there are, it's just language. It's not the word. The words are completely neutral. It's the racist asshole who's using them that you ought to be concerned about. And Joe Rogan was basically saying stuff like that. And there is this video that's going around that makes him look really bad. And he even addressed it. This is why I like Joe Rogan. He is coming out and he is saying something about this. He's like, look, dude, yes, this makes me look bad. But hey, dude, I'm just letting you know. And I think he's a class act, because he did the same thing with Neil Young. He's like, I love Neil Young. I'm not trying to offend him. And, you know, he's the type of guy that would have Neil Young and Joni Mitchell on his show. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck, you know? But getting back into what my point is that, you know, Joe Rogan can only do what he's been doing, you know, for the past 10, 15 years, Just sit down with your friend, smoke pot, eat some mushrooms, and have a conversation. Drink some fucking scotch, you know what I mean? And sit there and talk about stuff. And you're not always going to have friends that agree with you. You know what I mean? And now he's getting it from both sides, just like Dave Chappelle got it about the trans thing. And he's Joe Rogan's being called a transphobe when he has transsexuals on his fucking show, dude. He has people representing the LGBTQ community. And he literally has liberal people, conservative people, whatever. He likes stimulating debate. And there's nothing wrong with that. And the people that are just attacking him are just whatever, you know. I don't even really want to get into it. But, you know, you can hate Joe Rogan all you want if you want. You know, I'm not trying to change your mind about that, because everyone has a right to their opinion. But, you know, I like Joe Rogan, and I don't think, you know, everyone's getting canceled now. This cancel culture sucks. Whoopi, the same thing. I don't necessarily think that Whoopi Goldberg should have got suspended from work. Now, here's the thing. For those of you that don't know, on The View, Whoopi said the Holocaust was not about race. And it was about, you know, an evil mindset kind of thing like that. And if she had said, in my eyes, I believe this, she wouldn't have been in trouble. But she said, that's what this is about. And when a bunch of Jews heard this isn't about race, they got offended. And they had every right to be offended, you know, because when you look at it, Hitler's rhetoric. Yeah, and she's saying because he killed black people, gay people, Chinese people, whatever. That's why she's saying that it's not necessarily about race. So with that said, you know, like I was saying, Hitler's rhetoric alone was exterminate the Jews. We want to make one true race, the Aryan race, blonde hair, blue eye, all that stuff. So if you look at it, it's very much about race, if you think about it, you know. So in that regard, she's wrong. But if she had just said, now in my eyes, this, this, and that, I don't think she would have gotten in trouble. But she had to go and, you know, she's a very opinionated lady. And I love Whoopi. She's far left, you know, too, you know, but I don't care. I love Whoopi, you know. And so Michael Rappaport released a video on Instagram and he goes, Whoopi, I love you, but you're wrong and you got to apologize. And so, you know, he went off to say it ain't about race. That's fucking ignorant. Yada, yada, yada. It's Michael Rappaport, you know. And so she comes out on, I don't know, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, something like that. And she does apologize. She's like, look, man, I should have said this when I said that. And, you know, I was wrong. Now, here's the other thing. You know, she came out and owned it, just like Joe Rogan owned it. And people are canceling them. Now, like I said, Whoopi Goldberg's being taken off The View for 2 weeks at the very beginning of Black History Month. It's a little excessive, dude. Yes, Whoopi was wrong, but, you know, we're so ready to pounce on people, and it just sickens me. It just sickens me, sickens me, sickens me, and like I said, you know, Neil Young, to me, used bully tactics to censor a guy he didn't like, and to me, that's wrong. To me, that's hypocritical. This is a guy that, you know, was an anti-war guy. It's a guy that fought against censorship. How hypocritical is that? You know, and so I'm just saying, if you don't agree with me, that's fine. But let's agree to disagree and still be friends, because that's all I want. I just want to be friends with my friends. And so many people, I have friends that, you know, if you're Republican, they don't want to talk to you anymore. If you voted for Trump, they don't want to talk to you anymore. I have friends that if you voted for Biden, you're a pedophile and I don't want to talk to you. You know, and it, like I said, it goes on both sides. And I just can't live like that. I am not going to stop being friends with my friends that voted for Trump. My friends have voted for Biden. I voted for Biden. Do I think he's doing a great job? No, I do not. But that's my opinion. I have a right to bitch about that because I helped put the guy in office. I don't think the election was stolen like Trump says. You know, but I'm not going to stop being friends with my friends that do believe it, you know, because everyone has the right to believe what they want to believe. And it's social media with now that we can see all our friends' different opinions and argue about it online. That's when that's what's dividing this country, man. And it's still going on even into the Biden administration. So all I'm saying is I wish we could all get along again and just go back to, you know, everyone has a right to their opinion, man. And I'm not going to, you know, stop being family with my brother because he disagrees with me or my dad or my mom or et cetera, et cetera. So in short, I just want to say, just like Rodney King said, can't we all just get along? Never truer words could have been spoken, because we need to just start getting along again, start going to concerts and start, you know, watching movies and stuff and, you know, getting back into normal life, going to work, coming home and being happy, not getting off work and feeling like, you know, you're so trapped because the deep state cabal is killing babies for adrenochrome or you're somebody on the other side and you're listening to that crap, you know, and you're just stuck in the middle, just on both sides going, God, man, I can't handle it over here. I can't handle it over here. You know, children are dying because of this, not just because of COVID, because of the depression and the anxiety with what's going on for the past 6 years. It's just insane. And we need a time for healing. And healing is what we're going to do when I bring you this interview I did with Josh Miller. And it was such a great, how do I put it? A great honor to talk to this guy. Because like I said, I never thought in a million years I would ever talk to this guy. I remember when, like, he's literally like 6 weeks older than I am, you know, something like that, or eight or 9 weeks older than I am. I'm February 13th. He's the day after Christmas. He's December 26th. And so, like, there were certain people, kids that are my age that I just felt a kinship with, even if I don't know them. Sean Lennon is one of them because we're around the same age. Alanis Morissette, you know, people that are my age, Trey Parker and Seth MacFarlane and stuff like that. They're a few years older than me, but I can relate to them. That's why I love their comedy. I love Family Guy. I love South Park, you know, stuff like that. And so every so often I get to talk to somebody that I just, as a kid, I just grew up watching and just loving. And the same thing like when I had my interview with Keith Coogan, just watching these guys that are roughly about my age, you know, maybe a little bit older, you know, like Keith Coogan, I think was born in 70. He might be 5 years older than me, but you know, growing up and watching him on the Waltons, you know, growing up, seeing Josh Miller in The Greatest American Hero, you know, there's a couple things I forget that he was in. I don't know. I want to say something like Webster, but I could be off right there. But there were some stuff that he was on as a guest star, you know, as a TV star and as a movie star. You know, like River's Edge is one of the coolest fucking cult classic movies ever. And he's like a little demon boy, you know, but then by the end of it, he's just Keanu Reeves' little brother. You know, and come on, Tim, let's go home, you know, and that's so awesome, you know, and anyone who's seen River's Edge knows how awesome of a movie it is. So without any further ado, let's take a commercial break. And when we come back, I'll have my interview with Josh Miller. And then after that, I'll do the wrestling segment. And yeah, that'll be this week's episode. I don't know if I'll have one next week. I gotta, like I said, I'm doing this around my interviews now. So, all right, I'll see you on the other side of the first segment of commercials.
Hey, this is Kevin Kleinrock from Masked Republic and the Keeping It 100 with Conan podcast, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420. Make sure you tune in every week.
Hey, it's Pat Kelly of the West Coast Wrestling Connection and the Golf Guys Radio Show, and you're listening to my buddy, Cosmic Chris, Rock and Wrestling Local 420.
Hi, this is Keith Coogan. You may remember me as Brad from Invention and Babysitting, or Kenny from Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420 with Cosmic Chris.
Hey, folks, let me tell you about DDP Yoga. At a time in my life, not so long ago, I was suffering from Hep C as well as diabetes and well over 300 pounds. And a friend of mine sent me a YouTube video of this man, Arthur Borman. He was a paratrooper that had been told he would never walk again without the use of crutches. He gave DDP Yoga a try and is now one of DDP's leading success stories, as well as helping such people as Scott Hall, Chris Jericho, Gabriel Iglesias, Corey Taylor, Jake the Snake Roberts, Stevie Richards, and countless others. Diamond Dallas Page originally developed DDP Yoga for athletes such as himself who had suffered years of injury due to high-impact sports. When he ruptured his L4 and L5 spinal discs during the height of his professional wrestling career, he was so desperate to keep his childhood dream alive that he was willing to try anything. So he tried yoga for the first time. I know firsthand the benefits that DDP Yoga has to offer. Because Dallas had experience in many forms of fitness, he quickly learned how different yoga was from other traditional workouts. Soon, he started mixing elements of yoga with his rehab as well as traditional workout principles. For almost a decade, he has refined his program and has become a master at teaching it to others. DDP has saved my life. I encourage you to buy the discs as I have. Go to ddpyoga.com or you can download the DDP Yoga Now app. You can do it anywhere you want. He has cooking segments, live daily workout segments. I encourage you to check it out. Start living a healthier life. And hey, this ain't your mama's yoga.
This is Ryan Stasek from Umphrey's McGee. I play the bass and I don't sing. And we're hanging out on Rock and Wrestling Local 420.
Well, hello, Josh. How are you?
Hey, I'm in sunny California, so I can't complain. I think it's about 75 degrees and it's January 26th, I think. So
yeah. Not a bad life.
Right on. Yeah, I noticed I was just watching I don't know, these 80s countdown and stuff, and Rob Lowe was doing it from like this Hollywood mansion or something. And I'm thinking, God, is that Rob Lowe's house? Because he was in the middle of his pool, which had a little living area in the middle of the pool.
Wow. That's some big.
So yeah, you know, so if you're down in that area, you must be doing good.
It's pretty beautiful. Look, LA is a beautiful city. I don't necessarily love parts of aspects about being in Los Angeles, but it's good to be here because there's a lot of beauty and there's a lot of nature and I like being in nature. I just don't like the animals in the nature here, which would be mostly Hollywood animals. I try to stay away from them.
Oh yeah.
The zoo of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I've been, like I told you in our other conversation, I'm, you know, a big fan, and I've literally, cause like, I think when the first time I noticed you, cause I mean, I've seen The Greatest American Hero, big show of mine that I loved, you know, and there were certain ones, but the biggest one that I know that I just really brushed up on too the other night was, The Highway to Heaven. Yeah, you know, and just, and I was thinking, you know, like, because the other kid in there was Giovanni Ribisi.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and stuff like that. Like, did you ever think when you guys were doing that, like,
he would be like this big star, or you would be, you know, like, what was your, when you first got in, because both your parents are actors too, right?
I don't know. His mother's an artist, and his father is, I mean, his mother was an art, visual artist. I think she still is, but also does management. His father, I don't believe. I think his father.
Well, I was talking about your parents, you know.
My parents, yeah, no, my, I mean, everybody in my family is a performer of some sort, literally or figuratively. So I definitely, but did I know that we were going
to? Did you know, but did you ever have that feeling like, you know, that kid's going to become something, you know?
Well, I can't, I mean, about Vonnie, I don't remember what my initial feelings were about Vonnie, other than he was just a really sweet soul, and I really liked his mom. I don't remember, like, having that sense of, oh, he's going to go far in this business.
No, for sure. I understand.
You know who also is in it is this guy named Michael Bacall, who is one of my good friends in the Highway to Heaven, and he has written some really big movies. If you look it up, Michael.
Which character is he?
He's the kid who gets sick, and then I go to Victor Frantz and I start crying.
The Jimmy kid?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Not the kid that gets his leg amputated or anything.
No.
Okay. No. Yeah, the Jimmy kid.
Michael Lake is writing like a lot of, yeah, just look him up. I mean, he's been doing some huge stuff as a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I noticed, like, one of the other kids, like, the kid that gets his leg, you know, diagnosed, the kid he kind of talks shit to, and then they become friends. I mean, I remember him in, The Heavenly Kid, as the best friend of the bully in Heavenly Kid, because I was a big fan of that movie, too. And there's little things I noticed. That's why I'm a Highway to Heaven fanatic, so I'm just, like, get off on that.
Well, you know, I really liked Highway to Heaven too. I don't know. I guess I was my grandmother became, I don't even know how to describe this. My grandmother's Jewish, but she became a reborn Christian for a period of time. So she would go to these Jews for Jesus, Jewish church groups.
Yeah.
And I went with her because I loved my grandmother, and they would they would do tongues all over me, which is a different kind of image, but they would speak in tongues and then bless me and I would fall. And it was really kind of beautiful and cool. And some part of me wonders about the reality or the fiction of that, but either way, it was really like a spiritual experience. And so obviously Highway to Heaven being about angels and then the existence of God made sense for me to kind of love Highway to Heaven as well, because I think at that point I definitely ascribed to more of a traditional cosmology of the universe and my grandmother as well. So I kind of was like this Jewish Christian in a weird way, which I didn't realize how insane that was until I got older. But I think it came down to be honest with you, when I started to explore my sexuality or it started to dawn on me, I guess, I remember talking to a rabbi and a priest, and the rabbi was so much more accepting of the idea of me being gay that I just realized, okay, I don't want anything to do with the Christians. I'm going to stick with the Jews because there's no hell, and I'd rather be racked with guilt, psychological guilt as a Jew by other issues, and get to be gay or whatever I was at that point, bisexual or all those labels seem sort of outdated at this point to me, but.
No, it's so funny how 30, 40 years ago were so different than it is today, you know, like me growing up.
Yeah.
I grew up with an absolutely gay mom, you know, and like I said, bisexual myself, so, yeah.
That's so cool that I wish I had had a parent who was, I mean, my dad was definitely not gay, but he was very accepting of my sexuality, and I wish I had my mom be more, less, let's put it this way. I wish my mom had been less afraid of me dying of AIDS. Let's say that, you know, she was so petrified. She wasn't against gay people or homophobic. She was terrified of me getting sick.
Yeah, and in the early 80s, you know, and even up to the early 90s, that was, people didn't know, you know, so it's understandable.
No, actually, they did know. You could die. There was no medicine. And
well, I know, but I'm just saying as far as the stuff that was out there about AIDS. You know, when it first came out, none of the world really knew
Could you get it from being breathing room? Right, gotcha.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know, like, say, yeah. Sam Kinison's humor was funny then. It wouldn't go over now because we're 30 years ahead of that now is my point, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Was coming out hard to your parents? I mean, I don't know when you did it, if you were a teenager, or if it was 10 years ago, or, you know.
I mean, yeah, I think it's always, I don't think there's any, I don't think, especially as the context that we're literally, you and I are just setting the table about the culture in the world at that time, it was very difficult because, look, I was ridiculed and teased ad infinitum in school by kids who were either jealous of me for acting or jealous for me for being in movies and all that, or being too femme, or being different, or being not having a lot of money at the time, like whatever host of reasons, I was definitely felt bullied a lot, especially by, yeah, so you get it. And I've been thinking about that more lately, actually, like how bullied I was and how much it affected me and how much I carried the secrets of being bullied because I felt so ashamed of being bullied that I didn't tell anybody because I didn't want to, I was so embarrassed, you know, and I didn't know there was any help to get. So.
Well, you're also scared because the more parents want to stick their nose in shit, they can also make it worse. You know?
There's that too. Yeah. So with that already like in play and then like AIDS like rampant and just, and then also being a public figure and not being able to be truly who you are as a public figure and then worrying if you are found out for being, you know, sexually fluid, how would that affect your career? Like all those things became such a high stressor for me that I really couldn't act anymore. It was just, one of those things where I was just too petrified of, and more than anything, I was so stressed out from all of those issues that it was very difficult for me to work. And I just decided to go back to school and focus on my academics and be somewhere and do things that were exploring other parts of me, but also where I could hide a little bit easier and or, be more accepted. So academia and writing books and that world became more of a safe place for me than being a public figure or being an actor for that matter.
Right.
I mean, we've only had public outings or public self outings or public coming outs, in the last decade, really. And even still, there's not a lot of openly gay actors, let's be real. And so it's still a problem. I mean, you've got Billy Eichner, who's not a very good actor, in my opinion, but a wonderful spokesperson for the community and funny in sort of his shows and stuff. But, like, you know, there are a billion other actors out there that are clearly still not publicly themselves. And I think that's sad, you know?
Yeah. No. Getting back to, say,
so the answer to your question,
Highway to Heaven.
Not very easy.
Yeah, no, totally, yeah. Getting back to my original question with Highway to Heaven, now I asked you about Giovanni or Vonnie, so you guys were both kids, so like you were saying, you don't really know at that time. What was it like working with, like, Michael Landon and Victor French, who were that much older that you knew had been working since, you know, Bonanza and Little House and stuff? Because that must have been pretty cool, too, working with some vets.
Yeah, of course. I mean, legends. That was.
I mean, your dad Michael was the Brady Bunch kid. Was which
that
the
was
old
cool
Brady?
Too.
Yeah,
that was very cool. I don't think that stuff really dawned on me as much. I mean, because I grew up in a family of legends and actors around the house and the world, so that didn't like really. I mean, I was excited to work with Michael Anthony. He was a lovely human being.
Right.
Another piece of trivia that's interesting, though, his son is a wonderful director, Chris Landon. I met Chris on the set of Highway to Heaven when I was 10. And guess what? I knew there was something different about him that was different like me. And I didn't put the two and two together until like years later. And we actually went to high school. I didn't know he was gay then either. But now, of course, he's very openly gay. He directed Freaky. He's got a husband. He's got a kid. Like he, you know, but I met him on that set at 10 years old, believe it or not.
Now, is he the same age as me and you?
Yeah, around. Yeah.
Yeah, because like I said, you're only like 7 weeks older than I am. Like I said, my birthday's the day before Valentine's Day in 75.
Oh, cool.
So,
that's why I mean,
which is like a lot of the reason that I related to a lot of your acting, you know, because getting into that after that, I remember River's Edge. I mean, I really want to pick your brain about River's Edge because at that time, we're both like 11 or 12. You probably did that movie at 11 or 12. To be like that, like fucked up and psychotic, you know, like, and then working with Dennis Hopper, you know, who is another vet, and Keanu Reeves, who isn't really a well-known, but is in the scene. That must have been Crispin Glover. I mean, yeah, man.
That was an exciting shoot because you really felt like you were thrown into like, I felt like I was 13 years old and put in a punk band, you know?
That's awesome.
And we were shooting up north and also in the valley here. But, you know, a movie is as good and run and safe as its director. And Tim Hunter had such grace. He's still a really close buddy of mine. He handled the set with so much sort of panache, and he was so lovely as a human being. He made me feel, like, seen, and he directed me because I always like to make a lot of choices myself, and he would always sort of help me choose the choices to discard and the ones to sort of develop. And he really knew what was best to bring out the best in me. And so it was a wonderful experience, as was Near Dark, because you had Kathryn Bigelow and you had like a whole group of actors who had just come off of Aliens who all knew each other. So both those movies were, you know, kind of these charmed experiences because it was all the right elements came together. It just, it's, you know, and unfortunately that's very, very, very rare. You know, and Dennis was at the beginning of his comeback, so he was bringing his A game.
Right.
You know, the truth is that role was originally, Corey Haim was shooting that role that I played. And
really?
He was having trouble. Yep. And they had to replace him. So I always owed a debt of gratitude to him, and I had made a little movie of my novel, and I asked him to be in it, and he was really troubled when I met him. He was really going through some stuff, I could tell. But I think about him a lot. Yeah.
No, totally. I could understand because I've read a lot. I'm a big fan of both the Coreys, and you know, and like I said, a lot of the people that I grew up on in that day. You know, I mean, I'm kind of like that show. You remember that HBO show Dream On with Brian Benben? He would be sitting in front of the TV, and in his head he would always think of the old black and white TV shows.
Yeah. I never saw it, but I know the show you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how I, you know, that's how I grew up. I was a latchkey kid, you know, and my mom left early to live with her girlfriend, and then I was pretty much raised by my grandma, and so she was always working. And so I was always sitting in front of the TV, you know, I mean, sad to say, but, you know, I was always, that's why I know so much about movies and TV shows, you know, and I just seen you in like four different TV shows, four different movies, you know, so I can relate to a lot of that. So like I told you about Keith Coogan, you know, I remember all the stuff that he was in and, you know, so it really.
I hate Keith Coogan because he got Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, and I wanted that so bad. I met like 30 times for it, and he fucking got it. I hate him forever for that.
You know what's funny? When he told me that, he said that when he went in to read for that part, he said he went in twice. He said he went in normally as a normal actor, and they're like, okay, yeah. And then he literally, the whole stoner Iron Maiden heavy metal kid, he went in and put on that wig and went in there and did the character like that. And that's how he got hired to do that.
Yeah,
and it was just kind of funny that he told me that.
He should have tried hard enough.
harder.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, well, my point with River's Edge was it's such a serious role for like a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old boy to be like, kind of like Macaulay Culkin in The Good Son, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you weren't that bad as Macaulay Culkin. That's a way worse character. But, you know, to, you know, smoking pot, drinking, or, you know, drugs, stuff like that. You know, because that's the what I was around as a kid. You know, drugs and sex were just around when I was a kid, and so it's I was just like looking at you, going, "Damn, that kid!" You know, because that character could have gone any way, but by the end of it, you know, I love the fact that you and Keanu Reeves, you know, become brothers again, and you know, it's a great story, you know, and such a cult classic. That, you know, not a lot of people know about, but, you know, a lot of people are like, dude, River's Edge, man.
Yeah. No, it's a classic, no doubt. I mean, look, I was a troubled kid in my own personal life, and I was able to really channel a lot of that into that role. I mean, I had a very emotionally volatile, complicated upbringing, so I think it was easy for me to just connect with Tim, character, you know, and that's pretty much all I was ever cast in. I really desperately wanted to do things that were of a lighter fare, but, you know, I had so much fire in my eyes. I think that just people only saw me as this really either diabolical child or this killer or this troubled teen. And that pretty much dogged me most of
I could
life
see that
at that time. But fortunately, it also allowed me to do some of the most interesting roles of that time. So while I really wanted to be Jeremy Miller on Growing Pains, I think I got the better end of the lollipop stick because those movies, you know, are pieces of art I got to be a part of. And I didn't become a sitcom star, thankfully. I got to be a part of independent cinema of the late 80s, early 90s that changed film. Thankfully I had a very, complicated childhood that predisposed me to, probably A, needing to express myself in some way to deal with all those sort of demons. There were roles out there that fit me, and people believed in me for them. And, I think I was lucky to have those outlets to express that inner rage that I had as a young person. I mean, look, the inner rage eventually came out later in other ways, sideways, as it always does, as I got older, but I think definitely it helped me deal with those. But, you know, the flip side of that also is there's a tremendous amount of pressure as a young person in a little body carrying all that pressure to perform and succeed and audition, and the pressure and intensity of making movies and being around adults. I mean, you know, you have this very rapid, accelerated maturity that has to happen to function. And I think on one hand, that's incredibly necessary. I think is something I loved in hindsight, that I got to be around adults and that I got to learn so much so young. The flip side of that is that it caused me a lot of stress and tension in my life because I was, you know, I had a lot of big weight on my shoulders. But so it's not bittersweet, because I think it's more sweet than bitter. But there were definitely, you know, when you're especially also playing such complicated characters, it's challenging as an actor and rewarding. But there's also, you know, a lot of the darkness of the work sometimes stays with you. And I've learned that even in my own writing and directing, you know, that these things leave an imprint. Anyway, so,
yeah,
I wouldn't change anything, because I feel like I got to be part of cinematic history. And you know what? To be part of something that you could leave behind for generations is, pretty awesome.
Yeah. No, I think that's really cool to be even both TV and movies, because like
I was also a fan of Teen Witch. I thought that movie was cool. You know, which totally is a completely other side of Tim. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just like not the same. So that's why I like that you were in that as the little brother there, because that was pretty good. You know, and the Wonder Years.
I don't know if I loved the Wonder Years work of mine. I think I was a bit checked out. I think that's when the whole, like, am I gay? What's happening to me was starting to happen.
No, totally. I totally feel you right there, because like I told you, that's when I started, you know, feeling certain ways and stuff like that. But I related to you because, like I said, at that time, I was trying LSD for the first time and seeing the Grateful Dead in Sacramento. And, you know, and so that hippie character kind of like with the top hat, kind of like this hippie version of Flash, you know, and then the stage fright thing, and like that part of me, I related to that in so many ways, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
So that meant a lot to me. Like I said, I mean, you may not have liked it, but I loved it. I loved that fucking...
Well, I'm glad you liked it. I did not have a good experience making that. There's something that happens when you're, you know, they had wrote that character on the show for me, and they wanted me to be a semi-regular, which actually, by the way, Bonnie eventually did after me, but they wanted this character, Larry Beeman, to be a semi-regular on the show, and a couple things didn't go right. First of all, when you're a guest star, and then they're going to probably build you to be recurring, it's like you're the redheaded stepchild. You come into a family that already exists, and they're just like your foster family for like a week, and they don't really like treat you as one of their own. And yeah. I just remember the kids who were guest stars were schooled in a different room than the stars of the show. And I thought that was like a really bad way to set up the dynamics on set. Yeah. And Fred Savage was just really self-important and snarky and a midget. And he just, but like had all that kind of Napoleon complex crap of being someone who was too short and not happy about it. And I was really tall and gawky, and he was threatened by that, and he was just not a nice kid. And really, you know, have that, like, I'm the star of my own show and I could be a little twat, you know? I just remember it being, having a really poor taste in my mouth. And I remember they were having issues with me because I was very, coming from indie film, we kind of improvised, we did different takes. We did each take sometimes different. It was just more fluid and creative.
Right.
This was very much television, where you had to hit your mark. You had to do it the same way every time. You couldn't change the line. Everything was approved by the network. So it was very regimented, and I was not adapting to that kind of style very well. It just wasn't how I worked. And then on top of it, I think Fred Savage hated me because, you know, in every scene they had to put him on two Apple boxes with wheels and wheel them along. Because I was so much more taller than him.
No, for sure.
So, you know, it's just what it is. It's like dating. You know, sometimes your dates are good, and sometimes you just want to, how do you crawl out of the bathroom window and run away? That's how I felt about making that show. You know, like, I really did not enjoy it. But anyway.
No, I, you know what, though? I like that, because I like the fact that you're finding out that episode meant a lot to me. You know what I mean? I think that's way cool, you know, because I think it's cool when you can find work that you didn't necessarily weren't a fan of, and then you find somebody that goes, dude, I love that fucking role, you know?
Well, like, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, the quality of the work and what's the output doesn't always reflect the experience of making it. I mean, that's, you know, God, that's time in memoriam in movies that have stories like that, you know?
Yeah, because then, like I said earlier, like, you know, I like Teen Witch, and my big one, which I just watched two nights ago, was Death Warrant. And I grew up, I loved that movie, and playing that geeky hacker kid, you know, like, I couldn't relate to that character because that just wasn't me, but I was already a fan of yours, and at that time wasn't a fan of Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know? So.
Right.
You know, so I kind of like, what was that role like working with, I can't remember the chick's name that you were supposedly crushing. Yeah, her, yeah. But that must have been a fun role.
Uh, I just at this point, I found the material. I wasn't enjoying the process of that either. I really at that point wanted to stop and do theater and wanted to write and just do other things. So honestly, that kind of like is a period of just like not feeling it, you know?
Yeah. No, and totally when you're supposed to be crushing on this girl and then you're finding out as a teenager you're also gay, that must have felt awkward too, you know?
For sure. And I think at that point that was definitely the beginning of the end of me wanting to be in front of the camera for a while. For sure.
Yeah.
But also not a great professional experience, you know? I didn't like the personalities. Jean-Claude was lovely, but I didn't really like the director. I didn't like the whole vibe. Was just, it's like I was spoiled coming from all these better creative experiences and suddenly kind of getting opportunities to do more movies and probably just saying yes to too many things because they were all coming my way and not being a little more judicious and careful about what I wanted to make.
Yeah, because if you think about it, what you were coming from, like you were saying, is indie films, you know, are, you know, is a big thing. And like, look at Fred Savage. Like at that time, all he had was, you know, the Princess Bride, which was cool. And, the other one, Little Monsters with his little brother. And that's really his only claim to fame outside of the Wonder Years. So coming from that aspect of movies and your aspect of movies into TV, I could see absolutely, cause like you were describing, you know, like I'm the star. Look at his older brother, I can never remember his name, but the character he played in, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He was the spoiled actor, you know, and all that stuff. He always played roles like that. So what is it you are doing now? I mean, you and your partner are doing writing, I noticed, for it slips my mind right offhand. I was just looking at your Wikipedia. But you guys are doing directing and producing roles now.
Yeah. I just directed a movie with Russell Crowe that's a sort of a psychological horror, and we're going to hopefully do reshoots on that soon because we need to finish it because of the pandemic we didn't get to. We created a really great horror film that people love. That's a horror comedy that we wrote and produced called The Final Girls, which has found a huge audience. It's really amazing if you haven't seen it. I'm really proud of it. And we created a TV show, Queen of the South, that ran for 5 years on USA and Netflix. It just ended its season, fifth season last year.
That's the show I was talking about, actually.
Yeah. And then we just have new stuff coming out that's development, but nothing I can really, you know, talk about until it's official. Yeah, but right now I'm getting ready to publish a new novel, which will be my second book, and finish this movie that I directed. That was a really interesting experience, you know, directing Russell Crowe and having a big, you know, a larger film, which is an interesting experience working with a studio versus independent. But it's a smaller studio, so it's like a cross between indie filmmaking and a studio film, you know?
Yeah, as we wind down, would you say, you know, working behind the camera is more fulfilling to you than working in front of the camera?
Well, I mean, I haven't really put myself in any like legitimate serious way in front of the camera because I just haven't been pursuing it. So I can't answer that question right now because who I was then as an actor is not who I am now.
But
so
who you are
now. All I could really say is that I feel very much alive behind the camera. When it's right and when you're in the zone, there's nothing like it. I mean, even Russell was like always talking about like, this is the pinnacle. This is the top, right? Isn't that what you
said?
Right, yeah. And I kind of concur with that idea. But with, you know, that position, heavy who wears the crown, right? Like it's a blessing and a curse. But I like the idea of, I want to keep doing it because I love exploring genres and learning about genres and trying to master them. And I love the idea of telling stories about the human experience. And I love the ideas of taking people, being the sort of the master of taking people on a journey. I mean, that's a look, it's a godlike feeling, but it's also really fun. And then I think the whole thing is fun. You know, it's like I was a kid who always would direct plays in my backyard with my friends and write them, and we'd all act and do things. I mean, it's really just goes back to just being a kid and just being free and just really the sort of joy of creativity, really. I'm trying to keep it pure like that and not bring my ego into it or careerism into it. I just want to keep the process simple and pure and not about box office numbers. I mean, you have to think about, is this movie going to reach an audience? Do people care about this movie? Sure, you have to think about all that, but I'm trying to keep the process of it very much, not so serious, you know?
Yeah.
It's very easy in the business to kind of get very self-serious, and I'm hoping I could be less self-serious.
Yeah. Last couple questions. Who would you say you, out of your characters, that you probably relate, would you say you related more with Tim than any of the other characters?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I can answer that question, like, without thinking about it for a while. I'm going to give you just some glib answer.
Yeah, that's fine. It's a tough question.
Well, because they're all parts of me, right? I mean, it's like that weird Instagram meme or whatever you want to call it that's going around where it's, you know, everyone's like, I'm not just Drew. And then Drew, like, they have a quick montage of every character she's ever played. I'm this. I'm that. I forgot what it is. It's on Instagram right now. But I think we all contain multitudes, and I think every role we play is a part of us, right? So they're all parts of me in different ways.
That's cool. And, you know, the last question, if you don't mind, how did you meet your partner, like, and decide you wanted to get into being stuff behind the camera? Because I know she collaborate with him on a lot of stuff.
Yeah. We met on a blind date in New York. He was writing a play about Monty Clift and Elizabeth Taylor, and I thought, oh, wow, he's a playwright. He's not a Hollywood sellout. He's into old Hollywood. I'm from old Hollywood. Like, we already had a lot to talk about. He was a cinephile and I love movies. And so we just immediately had so much in common. It wasn't about like, where do you work out?
Blah, right.
Blah. You know, how much do you bench? Blah. You know, it was none of that stuff. We just had we had artistic goals and aspirations that aligned. And then eventually we came out to L.A., which is debatable, was a good decision. But whatever, we came out here, and I wanted to be closer to my mom, and he wanted to explore television. And then we tried it out as a team, and we always agreed, like, you know, if we don't like it, we can always work separately. But and now we are doing some of our own projects because, you know, it was definitely puts a lot of pressure on a personal relationship. So now we're enjoying taking a break and just doing it's like being in a band, but then you got to do your own solo album and then come back to the band and vice versa.
Right.
I'm enjoying doing some solo work right now.
That's cool. Actually, I did want to ask you something that I forgot to ask you, because I noticed your half-brother is Jason Patrick.
Yes.
That must have been cool. I mean, Lost Boys, is that your connection to the Coreys or...
No, my connection with Corey, remember, is he was...
Was because Edge, he went, right? he went, that was the River's Edge. Okay. And that was before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So look, I love my brother. We're very close, but you know, he's the older brother, so he's the alpha. So you're always getting teased and, you know.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he's a big personality. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And, I've idolized him ever since I was a kid. So, you know, but he's the big brother and he knows it. So, fuck him. he's amazing. He's, you know, we didn't grow up together. We became very close later in life. And he's the greatest dad. And he's a really supportive brother. He's always there when I need him. And I'm very lucky, you know. You know, very lucky. We weren't always close, but I'm really lucky that we have a really close relationship now. But he'll still be
that's how it is with
he'll
me and my brother.
He'll still be the alpha. He always comes into the house and, like, he'll hear my music on the radio and be like, he'll hear my music on the stereo and he'll be like, that sucks. You know, and I'll be like, whatever. And it's like, those shorts, they suck. I'm like, okay,
that's awful.
Yeah.
How do people find you, your fans on Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, Facebook?
I mean, you found me on Instagram. It's my full name. Joshua John Miller.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I really want to
thank you. You know where they can find me in my work? That's where they can
find me. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, thank you for being on the show.
I
really
appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm, like I said, I've just had some good luck cold messaging people. That's how I found Keith Coogan, and, you know, we ended up talking for so long, so.
That's cool.
Cool.
Yeah, well, you just got to make the call and go after what you want. You never know what will happen. They can only say no.
Yep.
What's the worst? All right, man. Sayonara.
Cool. Sayonara. Have a good one, Josh. Thank you.
C. D. F. 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 3 weeks we've been talking about the Platt Amendment. What are you people? On dope?
So this is Greg Golden from the Greg Golden Band Bizarre Guitar in Reno, Nevada, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420. Those guys rock.
Hey, this is Jeff Aiken from the Starfleet Leadership Academy, and you're listening to Cosmic Chris on the Rock and Wrestling Local 420 podcast.
Well, hey, did you enjoy that interview I did with Josh Miller? Because I sure as hell did. Man, it was such a pleasure talking to him, and hopefully I can get him back on the show sometime. He totally seemed enthusiastic about being on basically a nobody's podcast, so that makes me, that kind of stroked my ego a little bit. So, we're going to talk about some wrestling, but before I talk about some wrestling, I got to re-edit something real quick. I had said in the last segment that it was episode 199. This is actually 198. 199 will be next week's episode. So I'm two episodes away from my 200 episode. So forgive me for saying that earlier, because I had been ready to record another podcast a couple weeks ago, so I created the folder and then I didn't record the episode. So I was like, oh man, we're at 199. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. When I went in to save, it says 197. So I'm like, well, wait a second. What about 198? And I look at 198, there's nothing in it. And I'm like, oh, I created the folders without putting anything in it. So yes, this is episode 198, mind you. So next week will be 199. And let's see, as far as wrestling, you know, I'm not going to do play-by-plays. There's a few things I've noticed that I've really liked that I do want to discuss. Brock Lesnar coming back, for one, is pretty cool. He comes back as a babyface. And so, next thing you know, Roman Reigns fires Paul Heyman because of this weird shit. And Paul Heyman goes back to being Brock Lesnar, right? That lasts for about maybe a month. Next thing you know, Paul Heyman fucks over Brock Lesnar and he's back with the bloodline. So that's some pretty cool storyline as far as I'm concerned. I definitely liked that. As far as AEW is concerned, and I'll get back into some more WWE, but this is right off the cuff of my head, you know. So apparently Ruby Soho isn't really happy being at AEW because they haven't really done much with her. I think she's doing great. But she's like, oh, they're putting too much emphasis on Dr. Britt Baker. Well, Dr. Britt Baker is the Charlotte of that company. You know what I mean? So, whatever. I mean, I like Ruby Soho a lot more than I liked Ruby Riott. So, let me tell you. Sarah Logan has come back in the Royal Rumble. That was pretty cool. Sarah Lowe, because her husband is so-and-so Lowe from the Vikings. But there was a lot of cool things about the Royal Rumble. And one of the things I really like is the back and forth with Impact and WWE. They're literally mentioning each other, and they let Mickie James bring the Impact title to the Royal Rumble. Now, she did not win, but the fact that they were saying Impact champion, you know, and they were talking on Impact about her going to WWE. So this is like breaking down a lot of walls that 40 years ago, dude, you never talked about any other promotion but the one you're in, you know. And it was only during the Monday Night Wars when Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon would actually talk about each other. Outside of that, you know, you never talked about the other product. And I love it. I think it's awesome, and it's good for business. And it's nice now that there's a few different companies that people can go to. One of the things that Impact is also doing is now that Ring of Honor is pretty much no more. I don't want to say that for sure. It's just they basically let their entire roster go. And so there's a group of Ring of Honor people on Impact now. They've, you know, crossed over, you know, like the ABC soaps, General Hospital, All My Children, stuff like that, One Life to Live back in the day. They would cross over. They're doing the same thing with WWE and Impact, Impact and Ring of Honor. And AEW did it with Impact a few months ago. And, you know, I think it is really healthy for the company, and it's good to see that. I think that's awesome. Let's see, what else did you have? Brian Danielson's doing pretty good over in AEW. There's a huge rivalry now with Luchasaurus and... I can't even remember right offhand, but it's getting really good too. Let's see, what else? Right offhand, I'm trying to think. Oh my God. Let's see. There was the Brock Lesnar. Bobby Lashley beating Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar winning the Royal Rumble. And so now there's all these different storylines that are going on that are really good. I'm enjoying. They brought back Alexa Bliss, and now she's in with a psychiatrist about Lily. That's kind of interesting. Andrade is making a play for. Oh, pardon me. It's late night. God, I haven't yawned. In a long time during an episode, so I apologize. But, you know, I want to mention I'm recording this on the night of February 6th, which is Bob Marley's birthday, and my buddy Mikey Rasta. So I just want to wish him a happy birthday. And that's why I was saying it's just the night of that, and it's pretty late now. So, but yeah, I mean, as far as wrestling... There's a lot of good things. There's been some stuff with Decay lately that has been pretty nice. I saw Crazy Steve take on, I can't even remember who it was. You know, I have a bad short-term memory. So, but overall, I have been enjoying wrestling. All of it. There was a couple weeks where I didn't get all of Raw. So that's another reason why I haven't been reporting on it as much. Goldberg's apparently back again. So, let's see how that plays out. I think that honestly, now that CM Punk is in AEW, AEW has got a lot of star power, especially still with Chris Jericho. And they need to... not focus so much on the star power because now they have it. Focus on like storyline, because the thing is, the reason WWE always prevails is because they've got name people and they're the biggest thing in the industry right now. And they've got good storyline. They've always had the best writing. Now, there'll be times when WWE just sucks for years. You know what I mean? I'm not defending WWE, but there's a reason they're always number one, because they are the best at what they do. One of the things I wanted to mention before I close out the show here is that apparently, after 21 years, Shane McMahon is bringing back WCW. I cannot wait for that. I want to see how he does it, what he does, how it's going to be different, and see what the fuck's going to happen. Because now, here's the thing. Because of McMahon is running it, WCW might very well pick up where it left off. It might be just as big as just WWE or AEW because a McMahon is running it again. As long as they keep it away from the WWE. Nothing to do with the WWE. No crossovers, no nothing. I mean, maybe they should do crossovers like they're doing with Impact and WWE right now. I'm not saying that. But, dude, not like SmackDown and Raw, dude. That's too much. So, that's it for the wrestling segment. Let's take one more commercial break, and then I'll come back with my closing segment. All right, see you in a bit.
Master of the Band. Yeah. just around the corner.
Hey, we're back real quick for our closing segment. I want to thank Josh Miller for being on the show. It was such a pleasure having him on. And hopefully we can have him on again sometime in the near future, hopefully. So with that said, I just want to say my thanks and my shout outs to my normal crew of people that support me, starting with my friend, my old neighbor, one of my best friends, I love her, Chef Nikki Guzman at Mystic Meals and MysticSeasonings.com. Check her out. She's got the Mystic Meals podcast, Meow, and she's just awesome. And she's had some, we share some of the same guests, so some of those people on here you'll see over there. But follow her on Instagram, TikTok, whatever social media outlet. She has them all. More so than I do. I want to thank the man, the influencer, the Z-Man, Brian Zane with Wrestling with Regret, and his show on YouTube, and him being on Ring of Honor. Even some of the stuff they're still doing, which is Ring of Honor Hall of Fame stuff lately. He's still on that and doing stuff. So a lot of thanks to him, man. He's a great guy. He's helped me so much in the last 4 or 5 years of doing this. One of the best people I know. So check his show out. Check out my man, my friend. I love him to death. Jeff Akin from the Starfleet Leadership Academy podcast. He is another really good friend that I love, and maybe get him back on the show. I haven't had him on in a while. Definitely check out his show, Starfleet Leadership Academy, and also throw some love to John and Chad from the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling podcast on the Russo brand on the Realm Network. They also have a podcast on there called, let's see, what is it called? Oh, it's with Shane Douglas, the franchise, and it's called the Triple Threat Podcast, and it's the two of them with the franchise talking all sorts of stuff, and it's a few years old now too. I've loved it, and it's a great podcast. Chad also has another really good podcast called Declassified, where he takes old episodes of Raw is War when they were at that one theater for the first few years. I forgot. I want to say it's like the Hammerstein Ballroom or something, but I don't know if that's what it is. But it's an old theater in New York, and he takes old episodes back when DX was first starting, The Rock was first starting, you know, and just him and his buddies just break it down, you know. And, you know, and last but not least, I want to throw some love to Joe and Ed from the I Live the 80s podcast. Man, they literally show me so much love every week that you see their podcast. There comes a header up. Follow our friend Chris at Punching Baby Yoda on Instagram. Follow his podcast, Rock and Wrestling Local 420. They're always plugging my show, and I will continue to always plug their show. Check it out. I Live the 80s podcast. It's a great show. It's on YouTube and Facebook Live. And let's see, what else? You know what? If you want to donate to me and let my podcast have somewhat of a budget so I can try and have cooler people on and, you know, and actually put money towards this that I can afford, I have a little donate button, a little PayPal button, PayPal it up if you want, on the Podomatic site that hosts my podcast. So if you want to donate, you can just donate some money and help me actually make the show better. You can also cash at me at the money symbol Hippie Pimp, HIPPIPIMP. Just put podcast in the subject and I'll know what it's for. That way I don't put it, you know, with my other money. You can find me on YouTube. I'm trying to do more there, but it's just hard to do with YouTube because I definitely don't have the audience that I have on other platforms. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/rockandwrestlinglocal420. You can email me. Let me know what you think. If you got suggestions, if you want to submit some music, if you want to, you know, just give me some ideas. Say, hey, I'd like to be on your podcast. Just go to rockandwrestlinglocal420@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. I'm willing to do mailbags too if I get enough followers to actually write me a bunch of stuff. And let's see what else. If you know what? I'm on the Twitter, not very often, but I'm on Twitter at Punching Grogu. You can always find me there. And if you want to follow me where I'm actually most active, most active than ever on any other social media, I have the most amount of followers on Instagram at Punching Baby Yoda. I'll always be Punching Baby Yoda. I'm never going to change that name. I like the name. I don't like Punching Baby Yoda because Baby Yoda's so cute. But I do like the name Punching Baby Yoda because it's all about Jason Sudeikis, really. That episode of Mandalorian where he kind of like does the coochie coochie coo thing to him, you know, and Grogu bites him. And then he fucking sits there and he smacks him, dude. He punches him. And I'm like, ever since then, I'm like Punching Baby Yoda. So, yeah, be sure to check me out next time I have a podcast coming out, which will be episode 199. And then 200. I'm still not sure what I'm going to do. But like I said, I don't really want to do many episodes unless I'm bringing you an interview. So with that said, see ya.